I have things that I can turn to, like playlists, motivational speeches, music, books, prayer, meditation, going out into nature to, in a sense, like throw me back on, right? I can't allow something outside of myself to throw me off.
Are you ready to unlock stories of resilience, triumph, and transformation? Well, that's what Knocking Doors Down is all about. Jason LaChance, your host of Knocking Doors Down here. I am an addiction recovery and mental health advocate, as well as a certified addiction recovery coach. And through my recovery journey, I've explored my passion of speaking with those that have turned their darkest times into their greatest advantages. And my guest is the creator of the Sobriety Playbook, Michelle Curell. She was in active addiction for over 2.5 decades. And around the age of 37, thinking what she was using was heroin, it was fentanyl. And she overdosed, nearly dying. Michelle has completely turned her life around, doing amazing work, not only being of service to others, but her own personal growth. Michelle and I dig into a variety of topics and have an amazing conversation. We dig into things like how valuable is discernment in our addiction recovery and in life in general. We reframe the term boundaries to accessibility and how that might help you in your life and relationships. We also discuss how much of a say you actually do have in your life, your happiness, and prosperity. We discuss the muddy waters of communication and how things can oftentimes get messed up because we communicate differently than the other person. And we also touch on self-reflection and its importance in one's personal growth. We discuss all that and so much more on this episode of Knocking Doors Down. Welcoming to Knocking Doors Down, Michelle Curell of the Sobriety Playbook, my homie. We've talked about doing this for like, I don't know, 2 years. So
I know, right? I'm so glad to finally be here with you, Jason.
Absolutely.
So happy to spend time with you again.
Likewise, likewise. I mean, you're in a city and state that I love. I might end up neighbors with you someday. So
oh yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Can show you around and everything.
You are still in San Antonio, right?
Yeah, I'm still here in San Antonio.
Okay.
I came back about 2 years ago.
That's right. That's right. I can't remember when. Well, hey, I start my day with gratitude, so I like to start this that way. Three things you're grateful for today.
I would say the first thing is my tongue and my ability to speak.
Mm.
And then the ability to see through illusions.
Oh.
Of course, I would attribute that, obviously, to my sobriety. And then also my relationship with my ancestors and my spirit guides.
I love it. Okay. So I definitely with the last one for sure. And we'll dig into that. And then, you know, the second one you said, really, to me, the best single word I can think of is discernment that we get out of our recovery.
Yes. That is such a beautiful gift because, well, I was in active alcoholism and drug addiction for 25 years. And so you can imagine, like, at the end of an addiction, like the veil or like the thing that is just like between me and the world, there's like a big old wall. Mm-hmm. And like the longer that I get sober and the longer I stay sober, that's whenever I start to have that clarity and that discernment, that ability to differentiate the truth from the false and to see through the illusions, like I was saying, but it takes time because for myself, you know, 2.5 decades, it's like pumping myself with all kinds of poison.
Yeah.
It takes a while for the body to detox, but for me, I experienced it took a lot longer for me for the mind to detox. How about you?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I still have moments because I'm in my longest run now, 3 years, mm-hmm. Over 3 years, continual sobriety. And I guess maybe about 7. But yeah, it's allowed me to uncover a lot of those other things that are underneath, mm-hmm. you know, and especially that questioning what is consciousness? You know, like,
yes,
like hugely.
And, yeah.
Oh God, who was it this morning? I read Joe Dispenza, I want to say it was something he that I was reading of his, and he's, you know, he's talking from an astrophysical standpoint that really the present is the only thing that is in existence.
That's, you know, so true.
Future hasn't played out. The past is done, and our recollection of it, because, you know, yeah. And I've been digging into this more. Mm-hmm. Part of our brain where our memory is pretty darn close to where our imagination is. And I have a vivid imagination. So the things that I remember, I check in with people like, did that really happen that way? Or
am I just making that up?
Exactly. I've had to question that a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Man, I just wanted to say one thing, like consciousness, that is my most favorite subject to discuss. Oh my gosh, you know, it's just
elbows forward on the table.
Yeah.
Let's go. Yeah. I'm into it.
It's just so vast. And it's like, you know, when we were in active alcoholism and drug addiction, we were constantly in autopilot, mm-hmm. constantly just like in a state of fight or flight, and constantly just grasping towards pleasure and avoiding pain at all costs, right? And it was just like, for me, I was constantly looking for the next hit. I was constantly like living in the past, kind of like Joe Dispenza says, because what happens is when we're here in this now moment, and let's say we're in active alcoholism or drug addiction, what we're doing is we're pulling our past experiences from like the first time that we shot up, the first time that we smoked, the first time that we drank, and we're bringing it into this now moment. And then we're just trying to replay it. And so what happens is we get into a cycle, and we don't break out of that cycle until we realize like, this is self-imposed. Mm-hmm. This addiction is my fault. I need to take personal responsibility for my life. This is like a perpetual Groundhog Day for me. And the only way that this is going to change is if one thing changes, and that's everything. And guess what? Only one person needs to change, and that's me.
Yeah.
And that right there is like, kind of describes my first moment of consciousness.
Wow. And I, you know, when you talk about it, I'm a visual person. It makes me think of some sort of spaceship stuck in orbit around some planet or something. And it's mm-hmm. an asteroid field that you're trying to dodge so you don't die. And you yeah. need that big, huge change that'll give you a boost to your rockets to break the orbit and get some momentum and slingshot you the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll call yeah. that orbit misery, suffering.
Oh my gosh. You yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I love that visualization. And thank you for describing it that way, because I saw that in the movie screen in my mind. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know what? That's so true. Suffering will propel us like forward if we allow it to. And suffering is one of the greatest gifts, and it's one of the greatest teachers that we have, mm-hmm. especially like before we awaken and before we come conscious. Because if we don't realize that this suffering is actually trying to propel us forward, we're going to stay in a place of stagnation. And we're not, it's like suffering is a clue. It's pointing towards something better. But a lot of times people just don't have the clarity to see what it is that the suffering is pointing to. And it's really challenging, because I feel like a lot of people don't get the opportunity to see what it's really pointing to, because of overdose, because of the massive amounts of drugs that we've taken. We just can't see clearly. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how many people we have around us that love us and try to point us towards the right direction. Like, if you can't see it, if I can't see it myself, then I can't take a step forward, you know?
Yeah. Well, well said. Dang, we're just going to stop there. People take that in. I'm kidding. But you're so right. And we are doing so much self-medicating that the pain, just like we would, maybe you got a back pain. All right, I got back issues. I pop an ibuprofen. Okay, I feel it. The back pain isn't gone. I'm just not mm-hmm. feeling it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But for people like us that were constantly in the self-medication, yeah. we're never going to be able to recognize that pain. We're never going to be able to do the thing that says, like this morning, like I woke up a little early. Hey, get some extra stretching in to start your day. Guess what? I feel pretty damn good today all over, because I did the work that was needed. And granted, that's a small thing compared to addiction and the suffering that, I mean, I don't know about you. I have yet to meet an addict that that doesn't have at least a multitude of little T traumas and probably some big ones in there.
Yeah. Trauma is what led me to addiction unconsciously. I mean, it took me probably 3 years into my sobriety to realize that traumatic situations that I went through that other people inflicted onto me was what caused my addiction. You know, it's really challenging just to like to be able to look at that. But, you know, just like in regards to like pain and everything, just to kind of backpedal just a little bit, you know, in sobriety, there is no amount of money that anybody could pay me for me to take, for example, a Tylenol or an ibuprofen. And you know why? That is because that pain is an indication that there's something within me that needs to shift. It's either, it could be a physical, it's something that my body is trying to tell me that physically, like you said, I need to stretch, or maybe I need to go put my feet on the ground and ground and be out in nature. Maybe I need some more water. Maybe I'm dehydrated. Maybe I didn't fuel my body enough. Maybe I need to eat something. Maybe I'm tired and I need to go to sleep. Or maybe I had a conversation with somebody yesterday that did what I like to call an emotional drive-by. And I held on to all of that pain and that suffering that they were expressing to me, and I need to release it. You know, it's like that pain is an indicator. It's saying something needs to shift physically or mentally.
I want to dig in. I've never heard that emotional drive-by. Let's dig into that a little bit more. Are you talking? Oh, yeah. Because I'll bring up sometimes, you know, the emotional vampire. I know you're not a huge TV person, but there's a great show called something, What We Do in the Shadows. And it's like a mockumentary of vampires. And one of them, he is an energy vampire. So he just gets around people and he's monotone. and, you know, eventually it's like all the life force is sucked out of them.
Yeah.
Like me, that's one thing in discernment that I've gotten, and I've realized, okay, when it comes to accessibility to me, you are simply a person that I will speak with about the weather. After that, nice to see you. Take care. I'm out.
Yeah. It's so important. That's one of the gifts of sobriety, is that discernment and ability to, I really hate using this word, but to set boundaries and to also not give everyone the same access to me as I would give to, let's say, somebody that's sending me a DM. Like, I'm not going to just shoot somebody. Like, you know, I sent you my personal cell phone number a couple of months back. I rarely do that with anybody. I mean, you have to be a really close friend or a family member, somebody that I trust. I'm not going to do that with somebody that sends me a direct message. But in regards to what you're talking about, the emotional drive-by, I feel like this happens a lot with people in early sobriety. No judgment, because the only way that I'm able to identify this is because I've experienced this myself and I've done the same thing. But let's say, for example, I'm sponsoring a new woman, and she thinks that every time that she speaks to me, that she's going to talk about the drama that she's experiencing, all of the suffering, all of the pain, all of the trauma, all of that is necessary to speak about, but not every single moment of every single conversation. And what happens is, if I allow that to continue, every time I see this person, then they're going to think that I'm their garbage can, in a sense, you know? And so it's one thing, let's say, if a sponsee comes to me talking about her fears, talking about her suffering, talking about her resentments, talking about her trauma and everything, and then I can reflect back to her, what it is that she needs to do to change. What can she do to shift this experience? You know, and then if she takes my suggestions and she transforms her life, that's wonderful. But if I keep pointing her towards the big book, I keep pointing her towards service work, I keep pointing her to releasing her fears and her agitation and her doubt, and I keep telling her, you need to meditate more and pray and surrender and be more humble and be more honest, and she's not doing all of that stuff, and every time she comes to me, she drops all that in my lap, then that is what I call an emotional drive-by. The thing about emotional drive-bys for myself is that if I'm getting agitated, if I'm getting frustrated, if I have an aversion to what's happening, then I believe it's on page 164 or 417. It says, if there's something that someone else is doing, it's something that I need to change within me or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, but it's something that I need to take a look at in my life. Like if someone's coming with me with those things and I'm getting frustrated and agitated and doubtful, then I need to let go of expectations. I need to not hold on to those things. And a lot of times it's an opportunity for clear communication, because if someone keeps coming to me and experiencing all of these suffering and trauma and telling me about it, and then they leave and they say, man, you know, I feel so much better when I talk to you, Michelle, I just feel like lighter. And then I'm sitting there and I'm like, feel like I'm holding like a ton of bricks. It's like, okay, well, I need to talk to you about what's happening and what needs to shift for the both of us so that we can have a better relationship.
Knocking Doors Down by Carlos Vieira, now available wherever you get audiobooks.
I wasn't done partying, and I didn't want the binge to end. I think I knew that when I finally got home, I'd have to face what I had done, and I wasn't ready to do that. Being responsible for my actions wasn't something I was looking forward to. I had abandoned my wife and baby, my family, and my business. I wanted to avoid the shame of returning to what I had left behind. Even though I was not yet going home, I wasn't sure I had enough resources to continue the binge.
Click the link in the podcast description to find out more. I don't know about you, but the process of 12-step work for me has amplified my ability to communicate. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize, as a person that worked in communication forever, that I was a horrible communicator. And the part that I was horrible about, being a recovering people pleaser as well, was exactly what you were saying. I would just sit and go ahead and dump. And at the end of where's the energy for me? I still have those moments. That's still a big area for me of work is, you know, making that space for myself. Or when something is just being like, I had a situation yesterday, is like, I'm done having this conversation. It's going nowhere. It's accomplishing it nothing. So I'm gonna go ahead and exit now, which is a big change for me, because much like you, I don't like the word boundaries as much as I like accessibility. Mm-hmm. And because some people, it just, there's no access. That is the access. It's cut off altogether. Or it's simply, we will have a conversation about the weather. Or in my most intimate relationship, there is nothing hidden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so grateful for sobriety, dude. I was just reflecting on how much I have learned to communicate with so much more clarity than prior to coming into sobriety. I didn't realize how powerful talk therapy was. And that's what I think AA is. Mm-hmm. It's like, imagine, you know, before coming into sobriety for myself, like I used to pay therapists, God, I don't know how much money. I used to go and I used to pay them so much money for one session. But at the very beginning of my sobriety, I was told go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And then the pandemic happened. And so we were told that we couldn't go outside. Right. So I chose to go within. And then my sponsor was like, well, you're not doing anything else. Like, why don't you just go to meetings all day? And so when I started going to a minimum of 3 meetings a day for like 2 years, I realized whenever I was sharing in meetings that there was like a certain way to share, right? You share your experience, your strength, and your hope, right? So it's like, it's a format. It's like what happened, what it's like, and what it's like now, right? So there's a way to tell a story. And then I realized another reflection I got back from my sponsor. He's like, Michelle, whenever you're sharing, you need to be a little bit more honest. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he says, well, try to stop quoting what you've heard other people say and put things into your own words. Mm. I said, okay. So I realized I was kind of like being a parrot in a sense, which is okay for a little while. But once I realized that I was just repeating other things other people said, then that gave me an invitation to start exploring my own perspective and the way that I understood. It's like putting things into my own words. And then I realized when I was telling stories that not everybody was able to follow me. And so what I would do in my mind is I would start to create like a visualization, and I would describe that visualization as with as much clarity as I could in the meetings. And I try to tell them from like, try to tell stories to people, because it seems like people understand stories and visualizations or like analogies. I like to use analogies a lot too. Yeah. And so, man, my ability to communicate has really shifted. I mean, at the very beginning, it was, my voice was always shaking. I would sit in the very back. I did not want to speak up. And I used to sit in the back of the room for the first 30 minutes, dude. And I would rehearse in my mind what it is that I was about to say. So after the basket was, sent around to collect some money for the fellowship, I would raise my hand and then I would just like script out what it is that I've been planning on saying for the past 30 minutes. It was insane. Hey, it was so egoic.
Guess what? You're not alone.
Yeah.
I'll raise my hand to that. And I think it's just part of that process. And I actually, you know, hey, if there's anyone newcomer that's listening here, is like, encourage it. It's okay. It's okay until you find your voice in it, because it's not easy. Eventually you do kind of learn the three story or three part of the story arc. You know what I'm saying? You set the scene and here's the climax, and then your crescendo down the other side, you know, and you kind of do start to figure that out when you talk. Like for me, I was very much the same way. This is what I need to talk about today. Whereas now I kind of wait, let everybody go around, and then I kind of take off of what people have said. And you know, like, hey, George, Bob, Bill, you guys, like, thank you, that was really valuable to me, and here's how. And then I try to relate in that way that they're, you know, for people that don't do the recovery groups like us, there's no crosstalk. I've been in a few that are kind of sidebar stuff where we crosstalk, which is great. I find a lot of value there, but I think that's a way to reflect back to others that hey, you're heard, you're seen, I've gotten value out of you. And not only that, I really resonate with that in this way. And yes, you know, I think that's a valuable one. 'Cause there's a couple of guys and they're sweet, but you know, they've done a lot of self-damage, and so they'll ramble and you just let them ramble a bit. It's okay. They're still figuring out a lot of stuff in their head and heart and spirit. That's okay.
Yeah. Meetings are such an awesome place to practice the principles. And I mean, it's just like practicing non-judgment, practicing humility, practicing patience, practicing honesty, practicing like detachment too. Like, I know detachment isn't like one of the principles, but it's like, if I find my, it's interesting. Like I have found that there's so much depth in the 12 steps because, you know, on awakening, it says, if we find ourselves agitated or doubtful, it's like that is pointing towards attachment. And the Buddha said that attachment is the root cause of suffering. So if I am in a meeting and someone is speaking and I'm being judgmental or getting agitated or frustrated, that's just pointing towards attachment. So that's just a character defect. And what do we do with character defects? We surrender them over to our higher power and ask him, you know, for the next right thought or action, you know? So it's just, it's interesting because there's been times in my sobriety where I think like, damn, like AA is just a spiritual kindergarten and my ego says it's time to go. I'm bored with this, you know? But after doing some self-reflection, after doing an inventory, I can recognize that it's just the ego just trying to get me out of there. And then I start to realize like, man, there's just so much depth in this program. So
yeah,
The way that it all started, and I'll just kind of like come back to this, is by me being a parrot, by me being in the meetings and repeating what it is that I heard, because I came in there with such little self-confidence that to hear my own voice out loud was jarring to me. It was terrifying. And I was just so full of self-doubt and fear and anxiety to even open my mouth and to say, hey, I'm Michelle, I'm an alcoholic. Like, that was just too much for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't want, like you said, for a newcomer to feel like going into a meeting, repeating what it is that you've heard in the big book or other people say is necessarily a bad thing. For myself, I just found that after a certain amount of time, it was necessary for me to let go of other people's ideas and start to explore my own.
Oh, yeah. Can I get an amen, sister? I mean, but that's a part of our personality really starting to come through.
Yeah.
It's part of that work. Like, I've said when I like talk to teenagers, I used to experiment with chemicals. Now I experiment with myself.
Oh, yeah.
It's part of it. What gets me going? What has me fired up? Like, let's be honest. I was extra early up this morning, in addition to my cat, as she always does, waking me up. And then I was like, oh, damn. Formula One cars are on the track. I have a huge passion for it. Okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to do my prayer, meditation, do my little reading in the Bible group that I'm in with men. I'm going to get my coffee going, and I'm going to stretch some more while I sit and watch something I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That got me up. And, it's those, I think just those things that start to come out, those simple joys about life that propel us in a really good way, that it takes a while.
It takes a while. I feel like consciousness, spiritual awakening is a process of removing all that we're not and revealing what we have always been. And sometimes that means like revealing things that we're passionate about, things that we long forgot, things that we're interested in, things that we have a desire to explore, and all of those things. And the beautiful thing about, one of the beautiful things about sobriety is that, when you're not, running after the drugs and alcohol, it's suddenly you are left with like this vast amount of time to explore yourself. And it is like this gift of humanity is a process of self-exploration, And the beautiful thing is that like who I am today in comparison to who I was the last time that we did an interview, oh my gosh, like I have changed so much. My interests have changed, my clarity has changed. Everything about me has changed. Like we just grow so quickly in our sobriety. And it's not like an egoic thing. It's just like remove the drugs and alcohol and you'll see like how much your life can change. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and you got to do the work though too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like you just click your heels and you're like, okay, I'm sober. Like, oh, what's up? Like, I'm excited about my life. What's going to happen now? It's like, no, you have to do the work.
Have you dug into the archives of past Knocking Doors Down podcast episodes? The Knocking Doors Down podcast archive is available to you for free. Check it out. Here's a snippet from when Charlie Sheen was on the podcast.
AA is not the best place for a famous atheist. I kept looking for that fucking chapter. But it's not a one size fits all.
Sure.
It's like saying that we all think the same, like our brains are built the same. They're just not.
Right. Yeah.
There's such uniqueness involved.
Check out this episode and so many more in the Knocking Doors Down archive. And while you're at it, hit that subscribe button, give this video a thumb up, leave a comment, and share with somebody else that you know will get value out of the Knocking Doors Down podcast.
I was talking with my barber today because I had to get a haircut for you. very spiritual guy, very much into personal growth, and actually he's been getting education. He's going to start doing that in addition to the other stuff. It's where his real passion lies. It's kind of awesome. Like hey, dude, I understand the, I do these things because it fits the bills, and then I'm going to explore this other thing, and if it takes care of the bills, okay, we'll see. That's not up to me. That's up to God, whatever you want to say, you know? But we were really conversing about that, and he asked me that, like, oh, so, like, I mean, you know, I've never been to a 12-step meeting. Is everybody, like, pretty switched on? I forget what wording he used. And I go, sadly, no. You'll meet some people that are 20 years sober, and you would think they were on day two. It's not everybody. But for some people, that might be enough. That might be their capacity. I just know I didn't get sober for that to be my capacity.
Are you referring to switched on as in spiritually awakened? Is that what he meant?
I think so. I mean, it seemed to be the conversation was surrounding that.
I've experienced the same thing in regards to going to meetings and long timers that have been there for 20 plus years still seem to be in the same state of consciousness in which I found them in a sense, 4.5 years ago when I got sober. And that's not a judgment call. That's just discernment, because the reason why I say that is because, you know, how you stated at the very beginning of like this shift in our conversation is we have to do the work, right? Sometimes people I have noticed will come into the rooms, they will do the 12 steps one time, maybe twice, half-ass it, not put a lot of energy, concentration, honesty into it or whatever. So their sobriety is kind of shallow in a sense. If you want your sobriety and your consciousness to be deep, you have to be deep with your sobriety. You have to be willing to like go into those deep torrential waters that you are not willing to dive into whenever you're in your active alcoholism and addiction. You have to go find and dig for those pearls. You have to find the root cause of your trauma. You have to find what it is that you've like hidden at the ocean floor, you know? And the more that I'm willing to go all the way down and to like dig and to go into the darkness in a sense, then the more light I will experience like coming back up, you know? But if I'm just, let's say just for an analogy, if I'm just sitting there like at a dock and I'm just throwing out my reel and I just have like the bait just like right above the water, you know, hoping to catch like a really big fish and hoping to experience something really deep, and I just keep catching minnows and it's like, well, dude, you're not going deep enough.
Yeah.
So you need to be willing to do the necessary work to uncover what it is that you want to experience, because it's like, it's scary. I know it's scary, especially at the very beginning, to be honest with yourself, to look at those fears and everything. But in order to have a more deep spiritual awakening, to become more conscious, you need to be willing to go into the darkness.
Yeah. One of my mentor, Mike Diamond, has been on here a couple times. He hit me with that about a month and a half ago when we were conversing, and he's like, it's not deep work. I'm like, huh? And he's like, shallow work, deep work. And you know, he kind of broke it down similar to how you did. And he's, you know, remember the things that you have to do in the dark when no one's looking. No one's going to come up, pin a medal on you and say, great job, whatever it is. It's the things that sit within ourselves that we have to confront by ourselves. Now, it doesn't mean we're alone in the process. We, you know, hey, you know, if I really was struggling with something, Michelle, I'm a little hung up here, spiritual wise, I'll reach out. You know, I know you've got these tools. These are things you've really explored. So the people are there to help you. But at the end of the day, we're still the one that has to go inside ourselves. Again, my slogan, no outside solutions to inside problems. We're going to have to dig in there and ask ourselves, you know, it's like you said, the conversation with this person, it's like, yeah, that's how it went for me. I don't really like it. You don't get to go, damn them. You go, damn, that's on me. And it is. And that I actually find very exciting. When I finally got to that point of accepting that, I was like, holy Jesus, this is like it was very empowering to realize, wow, yeah. like I do have the hugest say. I really mm-hmm. do.
Yes. Dude, I love that. That's exciting whenever you look at it from the correct perspective and from the correct vantage point, because for myself, when I started to realize like, huh, I'm causing all my suffering. It's my perspective that's skewed. I'm causing my anxiety. Well, guess what that means? Like, I can fix this too. Like, I have the power and the tools and the ability to completely shift my life if I choose to do those things. You know, I've had sponsees call me in the past and they're like, I went to this family thing, or I went to go visit my friends and so-and-so said this and that. And they're like, it just threw me off. And I was like, dude, like, well, just throw yourself back on. Like, what is it that will throw you back on? For myself, like, I have things that I can turn to, like playlists, motivational speeches, music, books, prayer, meditation, going out into nature to, in a sense, like throw me back on, right? I can't allow something outside of myself to throw me off. And if for some reason I do, then I know what it is that I need to do to shift that perspective real quick.
Yeah.
And it's like, I started to see, I think about a year into my sobriety, I started making videos on YouTube, and some of them were titled like The Gift of Resentment, you know? Mm. And it's like all of these feelings, these emotions that we usually have resistance towards, that is just an indication that there's something within me that needs to change. And I can flip it really quickly if I start looking at it as a gift rather than just like a curse, you know?
Oh, I do. Yes. And I haven't gotten to talk with anyone about this because it is so important. Doesn't matter who it is. I probably shouldn't mention their name anyways. We were having a conversation and I was like, well, are you praying? Yeah, I've been praying for more patience. How's that going? God, I'm really being tested. I'm like, because you've been praying for patience. That's what you're pulling into your consciousness, is that I need to practice more patience. It's like, if you were like, I want to be a better free throw shooter, guess what you're going to do? You're going to keep shooting a bunch of free throws. Yeah. And I've seen it and I've done it, where it's that avoidance of the things that when I've become very self-aware, conscious of them, that I've ignored it in the toolbox. Mm-hmm. And you just can't, once you become aware, you are effed. You can't do it anymore. There's no way to ignore it anymore. It's there. You're aware of it. And now guess what? You're going to have to access, the good old cliche, those tools in the toolbox.
Uh-huh. And it's funny. It's like, once you're aware, it's like, you can't be unaware of it. It's like, you can't unsee it. And so in a sense, I feel like I had a pass to whatever it is that was going on in my life. But once I became aware of my intention or whatever was happening in that situation, then guess what? I'm responsible now, because I can see with clarity that I had a bad intention in that situation, or I was trying to do this to manipulate someone else. But once I see it, it's like, guess what? You're responsible for this now. So if you choose to continue making that decision, then there will be consequences for it. Mm-hmm. And it's, and I don't like having negative consequences. So it's like, you have to make a completely different shift as far as the type of person that you are.
I don't know about, I'm a person that I feel things in my body. And if I'm at a situation where I know I've got to own my part and apologize, make an amends, the word that us recovery people like, I have to do it. Otherwise it's going to knot me up. If I'm upset, then especially at myself, then I don't want to eat and all these different things. Like, I can't hold it anymore. I don't know how many apologies I've made to people and they're like, what are you talking about? Like, we're good, man.
Like, yeah.
Okay. Well, I had to for me.
Right. It's so important. And it's interesting. Like, I never really understood when I first came into the rooms, clean your side of the street, you know, do a thorough house cleaning. What the hell does that mean? But it's like, just for example, today, my fiance and I went for a hike, and we were on our way home, and unconsciously I laughed, and I started I laughed at him about something that he said, and it was like a judgment. And it just like bubbled up and it just came out, you know? And like within 15 minutes, it's like, I'm making amends for it. You know, what is it that I can do to make it right? Or telling him that I will be more aware. And you know, what I talked to him about after that was like how important it is not to be hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, because I was hungry and I was thirsty and I was tired. And so things that usually don't activate me or cause a reaction within me did, because I wasn't eating or staying hydrated.
Yeah. I had a situation with my partner where she had said something, and because I have this brain that tends to react really quickly from all those years of radio and acting and, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And in certain contexts, the joke was really funny.
Yeah.
And she'll laugh about it now. But right. In that setting, it was not. And it was hurtful. Uh-huh. And so yeah. It was like, oh, shoot. It was an immediate, you know, apology.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like I had to, my learning from that was, okay, I have certain things about this vessel that I'm in, that my spirit's in. And
yeah.
I've got this mind that'll think, oh, this is a wonderful idea. And it just comes out of the mouth without thinking. I have to accept that that may always be, but the thing I can do is try to right that situation, especially when the intention isn't to harm anyone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
I get that.
It's like, why did I say that?
It sucks whenever you think that a situation is an opportunity for a joke and you're like not on the same page as the other person, and you're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to hurt you. I just thought that it was funny and I thought we were joking, but apparently not.
Yeah, I dropped the ball, didn't
I? Yeah. Yeah. And I'm similar to you too, as far as like, I feel that in my body, like, cause I can feel like I did that yesterday with my fiance. I thought that he was joking about something and he wasn't. And it just hurt his feelings like so bad, because it was a moment for him where he thought that I was going to respond in a different way and that I would understand what he was talking about. And I laughed because I thought he was joking. And then I immediately like felt like that twinge like within my chest. And I was like, oh, you know, I had to, I didn't have to make an amends, but it was like, it was important.
Yeah.
That I let him know, like, that wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to be malicious. I love you. I hear you, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's that thing too, that, you know, just that I encourage people to continue to explore, that for me helped me get out of any victim mode, was that not taking it personal and realizing, you know, senders, receivers, the way that things are said, the way that they're taken in, you know, all this stuff has to do within our state of mind. Like I got a text not that long ago from a lady that I respect, love, adore, and the way it came across, and I was like, I'm going to sit with this. So I just called and said, hey, I know you text the way you talk, so I'm trying to understand, how is this coming? Oh, no, that's not what I meant at all. And, you know, and I don't think it was that I've confronted it, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but it was then clarified, like, oh, I'm, you know, hey, no, that's not what I meant. And I'm like, you don't need to apologize or anything. I'm trying to get clarification here, because communication can be, the waters can be muddied pretty quick.
They sure can. That's really good that you did that, because I've had to do that so many times. As a matter of fact, I the way that I come across to other people in my texts can seem very, very sharp. And so because of that, because I have this straightforwardness about me these days, and because my life is so busy, I like to just get to the point. And then once I get the answer, then I'm like, great, you know, I'll talk to you later. it's nothing personal. It's not me being rude, but the way that it is received sometimes is just like really distorted. And so what I try to do is for myself, I have an iPhone, I'll just record like a voice memo. So people can hear my energy. They can hear my voice. They can hear my intention. There's a lot more clarity as opposed to just words.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard because we don't know the person on the other end, like what their energy, they might be looking for that pick me up. You know, my brother, I love my older brother. Well, he's my only brother, but he's older. Mm-hmm. And that he's dropped so much wisdom on me in his own personal growth. He's not, you know, in recovery or anything. Mm-hmm. But just a person that really focused on that in the last 10, 12 years. And he's just like, my texts are just matter of fact, and I'm letting you know that. and it's good. There's not a conversation. I mean, I see it even with how he is with his wife. You know, something like dinner tonight with the Smiths at whatever ? Yes, great. See you there. Love you, babe. You know, it's like, it's just for the informational confirmation. That's it. He's like, I don't converse with my wife that way. We don't have a text like, how's your day, babe? What's going on? You know, because you're not going to get it. Like, no offense. None of us are John Steinbeck to be able to set the scene of what's going on. As a matter of fact, when I do that, people get pissed off at me. Like, could you shorten your message? I'm like, I want clarity. Like, X, Y, and Z is done. I don't care if it's 50 words. You now know what has been done, you know?
Yeah, but for sure.
But I try to... try to lighten it up a little bit. It's just such an odd time we're in when it comes to communication.
It is, dude. I have to give you a book suggestion.
Okay.
It's called Super Communicators.
Okay.
Just because this is like the field that we're in, communications, and the author is named Charles, and his last name is spelled Duhigg. I have learned so much, and I'm only into the second chapter. So check it out. I feel like anybody that's watching this will definitely find value in it, because we all communicate with everybody that we're around. You know, there's one of us is always a sender. There's always a receiver. There's a lot to consider whenever we're in the world, whether this is for business or this is for personal growth. You know, spiritual development or whatever, if this is for work or just something that you're passionate about, learning to communicate with more clarity is just like such an amazing tool to have, because it just strengthens the bonds like within people, and it develops trust too.
Yeah. Well, and body language plays a huge part.
Yes, for sure.
We're slumped over and all those things.
Yeah.
I'll throw one out that, and I hope he hasn't responded yet, but hopefully a book that I've been loving. So there's a TV show on called The Irrational. I love Jesse Martin, an actor that I like. He's in it, and it's based on Dan Ariely, kind of his writing, his research, and his life. So Dan's at Duke University now, I think, and he was burned like over 70% of his body, but in the psychology field, but he studies irrational behavior, and the book is Predictably Irrational. And it's really fascinating, because where I'm at, you know, he's talked about how, you know, companies try to get you to buy the product they want by pricing one lower, one higher, and the one in the middle that they really want you to buy. And, you know, it's really interesting. And he does start to touch where I'm at on, you know, the irrational side of addiction. And, It's really quite fascinating how our brains so much is based from, you know, like you said, past predictors and how we were and being stuck in that and our decision making and how we set values and all these things. And it shows me also that brilliance of working a 12-step program and the part of exploring your spiritual side. Like, none of these things, like, it's all got to be one big encompassing thing.
Yeah.
Like, you can know the big book back, forwards and back. You can know the Bible forwards and back, or what, the Quran, whatever it is. But unless there's like the actual practice of all these things, it's just information for you. It's not yet become knowledge. And it's like, you get the information, apply the knowledge. Like what we were saying before, you recognize something, you know, it's there. You can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah, there is a My gosh. There's a motivational speaker that I like to listen to, David Goggins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
You're familiar with him?
Oh, of course. I've read his book. I forget which one. It doesn't matter. But I've read one of his books. Yeah.
Well, you know how I was listening to one of his podcasts the other day whenever I was working out, and he's like, there's a difference between theorists and practitioners, you know, and it reminded me, like, the first thing I thought of was, you know, those long timers that have been in the meetings for 25 plus years and they know the book in theory, but you can tell by the way that they interact with people after the meetings that they're not practitioners. And it's just, like you said, we can know the Bible, we can know the Quran, we can know all these spiritual texts and everything, but we can know the big book, but if we don't put the things that we have read into practice and transform them into wisdom, then they're just words and they don't even matter.
Yes. Yeah. It reminds me, then you're just the guy. Have you ever seen Good Will Hunting?
Yes.
Okay. You remember the scene where we're at the bar and there's the guy that he just spouting off a bunch of information. You're just that guy that didn't get the phone number.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you are. You're like, okay, you know all this stuff. Great. You can quote all these things, but it doesn't mean anything. So you're trying to impress me with rhetoric?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at the end of the day, guess what? I don't really want anyone to impress me. Just be yourself. So,
yeah.
And I tell myself that, you know, I got to check my own shit all the time.
All the time. Yeah. It's kind of constant self-reflection, constant self-evaluation, constantly for myself, like looking at my intentions behind things. Mm. I mean, it goes all the way to me picking up my phone and thinking about texting a friend and says, hey, how are you doing? And I'm writing this. And I'm like, hey, wait, do I really want to know how this person's doing?
Mm.
Or is it that I'm just waiting for them to say, hey, how are you? So that I can just, you know, tell you all the stuff in my life that's going awful. And then so that you can have sympathy for me and feel bad for me. You know, I don't do that anymore, but in the past I used to do that. So it's like always being mindful, always reflecting on my intentions behind every single thing that I do is one of the things that's about being sober.
Yeah. No, it's a very good point. I've thrown a few people off where I do, hey, I didn't talk to you. How's it going? And they'll kind of, you know, spew out either good stuff, bad stuff, the combination thereof. I'm like, great. I just wanted you to know I was thinking about you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here to the best of my ability. Keep taking care. And then, you know, well, how are you? Good. And that's just my response. Like, you know, that's a thing that I've noticed. It's changed. Like, I'm not checking in with you so you check in with me. I'm seeing how you're doing. I'm asking you know?
Yeah. And one of the things that I've noticed too is like, when I send texts like you do, and then they ask me how I'm doing, and I just say good, it's like, that's when they want to continue to like reaching out to me. Cause it's sad in a sense, because people are thirsty for that type of relationship where it's not just like one-sided, or where they receive a text from somebody and they're like, damn it, man, what does this guy want? You know, what do they want from me today? What are they looking for? What do they need help with? And then they have get that refreshing, you know, text from yourself saying, hey, how are you? You know, I just wanted to see how you're doing, you know, and then you didn't want anything from them. They're like, man, that was awesome. You know, and that kind of bleeds into just like leading by example, because if we send out texts like this with a genuine heart and curiosity about our friend and see how they're doing, then it kind of like plants a seed. And of course, this wasn't intentional in my mind, making contact with a friend like this, but it plants a seed of, hey, the next time I text my mom, you know what, I'm just going to genuinely want to see how she's doing today. Right. And then it's just like paying it forward and paying it forward and paying it forward.
Yeah.
And we can change the world just like by doing simple things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it, and here again goes one of my thing. By no means are we trying to come across pious compared to anybody else. We're just sharing with you our experiences, what's worked for us. And, you know, hopefully there's some tools and things in there for people that they can absorb and kind of reflect and, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're most certainly not holding up the mirror and telling you to look into it. We're sharing our mirror that we've looked into. So.
Yeah, for real. It's like, I think the big book or the 12 and 12 says like, my higher power definitely has not rendered me white as snow. I am not perfect. But my life has changed a lot and I'm grateful for that.
Absolutely. I don't know. We might go too long. I think we'll do a follow-up down the line, and we'll explore more spirituality, because, I mean, you've dug into so many different aspects of it, not only, I don't want to say religions, but different faiths and stuff like that. But we could probably go another hour, so we might have to reserve that for next time.
Dang, we've already gone an hour. Shoot.
Yeah.
That was fun.
We're there, so all right.
Okay.
People want to, we're going to do random questions, final thoughts, but before that, people want to connect with you, easiest way, we'll make sure the links are in the podcast description.
For sure. Yeah. The Sobriety Playbook on Instagram, on TikTok, and I have over 300 plus videos on YouTube. My handle's The Sobriety Playbook on all platforms.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Follow the channel for sure. We were talking about, I will share this before we do the, random questions is, we're doing what one of my mentors, Greg Champion, calls the digital scrub. And we're talking about our YouTube channels where it's like, I was telling you, I don't see your stuff in my feed as much as I'd like with the YouTube shorts. And it was like, I am subscribed to so much useless stuff. So I, much like you, spent like 20 minutes unsubscribing to things that it's just like, I'm never going to watch this.
That's a good idea.
It's a useful tool. I don't know about you. I did that once I had met Greg, and he's like, hey, yeah, do the digital scrub. And it was, well, explained further. He's like, if you got anyone that is maybe their first name and where you met them, they're out. Especially if it's women. I'm like, Oh yeah. It cleared up my book and my phone.
Wow.
I think if I do one flip, it'll go through the whole book of contacts now.
So no
it's,
way.
It's not
That's
many.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's a good thing to employ, the digital scrub. So, all right, here we go. Random questions for you. What's a fun one? Okay. This I want to know. What would be something people are surprised to learn about you? Maybe hobbies, interests, unique skill.
Unique skills, hobbies, interests. I'm learning Sanskrit.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Why? What made you want to learn? Like, what was the prompting?
So the prompting was when I started going to a Buddhist temple about a year and a half ago or so, and they do chanting Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And they chant for about 30 minutes, and they handed me a book. And they said, oh, just follow along. And it was all in Sanskrit. And I did not understand what I was looking at, but I saw how beneficial it was to be chanting in Sanskrit and how much my consciousness shifted that I just started to study it.
I'll be damned. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Best and worst advice you've ever received.
Best and worst advice. The best advice. Best advice. Focus on yourself. Worst advice. Gosh. Don't listen to your parents.
I'm going to tell you now, at almost 46 and having two teenage children, oh, mom, you were right. And I let her know. I let her know. And I was a good teenager, mind you, but it's like, they even told me when they were little, like, just wait. You know, it's coming. All those sayings, you're going to understand me more. And I was like, sure. Okay. I'm like, oh my God, my parents make so much sense now.
Man.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
Flying. Oh my gosh. I love birds. So I go out to a hiking trail every single day. If it's raining, it's too cold, whatever. And I just have this fascination with birds and flying. And so, I don't know, I just, I like being able to be up high and to lift myself up to be able to see like from a different perspective. And I feel like I do that with my life now, in a sense, like, for example, if I'm going through an issue or if I have a problem in my life, if I'm like really close to the situation, if I just take a step back and I look at it from a little bit more of a distance, I can see more clarity. Yeah. If I pretend that, like, let's say a friend is calling me with the same issue and I pretend like it's them going through it, I can see from like a different perspective. Right. What type of advice would I give that friend? And then I'll give myself that advice. And it's only because of detachment, because of that separation, that I can see that. So
I think a real neat real world to maybe help people kind of, you know, quantify that a little bit, if it's hard. Have you ever been somewhere where you always drove there, but then there mm-hmm. comes a time where you walk and you're mm-hmm. like, oh my God, I never noticed that.
Yeah.
It happens to me all the time, you know, that I've lived near where I do almost 20 years and was walking somewhere the other day because I had to park way further away than usual. I'm like, how long has that been there?
That's been there the whole time.
Right. 20 years and I never noticed.
Yeah.
It's a trip. I like that. That's a great mm-hmm. perspective. All right. You could have dinner with any one person, living or not. Who are they?
Jesus. He is my most favorite ascended master.
Same.
Yeah. I just have so many questions. And I've always felt very drawn to him ever since I was a little girl. And he is the one that I surrendered to whenever I first came to AA. And his teachings were what helped transform me into the person that I am. And he still continues to guide my life. And I just try to be the love that he has shown me whenever I'm interacting with other people.
Yeah. Oh, that gave me chills. I got my sweatshirt mm-hmm. on, so I don't think people can see it, but yes. And we go to this really great church, and they've started this year with Genesis, because, you know, my understanding of the Bible is uh-huh. not been the best. And this is a kid that went to Catholic mm-hmm. school, had questions. They're like, just read your Hail Marys, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately. And it's just the way that now it's like, oh my God, this book was written to me, but not for me. And mm-hmm. and there's so much different literary style, and it's all a connection that leads to Jesus. And, you know, it's just like my mind has opened up so much more to what is coming at me. And one of the pastors the other day, he dropped it was, I'm going to mess up the quote, but it was from Napoleon, who in essence went like, someone that was under him or whatever was asking him about Jesus, and Napoleon said, well, if you look at all the people that have conquered the world, myself, the Caesars, you know, all these other, you know, the Mongols, whatever it is, we all did it through force. And even at his time, what was that? 300-400 years? I don't know. When was Napoleon? 1600, 1700s? I can't remember. Whatever it is. And at that point, he goes, all the rest of us had to conquer through war. He's the only one still to this day that has amassed all of his following through love.
Oh, yes. Like, whoa. That gave me chills.
Yeah. Right? And yeah. Still, to this day, you know, it's like, oh, okay. All right, I won't tear up. It's like, that's a powerful thing to, like, really was for me to take in. It's like, oh, my goodness, you're right.
Wow. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
There are some things sometimes that you say that I'm like, dude, wow. There is one thing that you said on one of our first interviews, and you said, you know that attention is not love, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, no, I didn't put those two things together.
Yeah. Oh, it took me a long time. Remember, I did some sex and love addiction work too. And it was like, because that's still one of my biggest defects is
yeah.
you know, am I attractive? Does this person still desire me? And not just sexually, but overall. And, you know, I have like an abandonment thing, you know? Mm-hmm. The first girl I had a crush on, unfortunately, she had diabetes and passed when we were kids. And I've had to go, like, I have to take a look and go, oh yeah, that's something that sits within me still. Like, I can remember her strawberry blonde hair, and she's just the sweetest, you know, girl, yeah. and laughing on the bus and all these things. And so, you know, it's again, that uncovering, where did that lie? Like, where's my desire to have to be desired and then be the person that decides when things end? It's control, yeah. you know?
Right.
So, and boy, I sought a lot of attention that wasn't good, Michelle.
No kidding.
Oh,
I goodness. Hear you.
Well, you're awesome, my friend. I'm glad we got to do this. And boy, it's fun. I don't know how we have to figure out how to do this more often, but
the
floor
anytime.
Is yours. Anything you want to lend, maybe people that are struggling or just want to drop some knowledge, something that you're even working on and reflecting on.
Something that I'm truly just reflecting on is letting go of a spiritual bypassing. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that before, but at the very beginning in my sobriety, my sponsor, he would always just point me directly towards the Bible or through other holy scriptures. And he would say, you know what, Michelle, you're suffering. I would tell him, Roland, I'm suffering. I'm going through a lot of pain and everything. And he's like, you are not the body. You are not the mind. Immortal self you are. When I say that I'm suffering, I'm talking about the relative. What he is talking about is the absolute. The relative is humanity. The absolute is our God consciousness. There is a quote by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. He says, love is knowing that I'm everything. And I just totally lost it. And the bottom line is, like, we're in humanity. We're human. We're here in this human experience. And then we also have a goal of attaining enlightenment, of being completely realized. But in order to get to this place, we still need to experience our humanity. So instead of, like, sidestepping my pain, pushing away my suffering, and just declaring, like, what Jesus says in the Bible, I need to be able to experience my humanity, experience my suffering, look at my trauma, look at my guilt, look at my resentment, feel the pain, feel the sorrow, feel the loss of loved ones that have passed away, and experience those things rather than just saying, you know what, I'm not a body, I'm not the mind, immortal self I am, everything's fine, you know, like, let's just keep going. Being willing to look at the things that I've set aside for so long, and instead of, you know, just pretending like everything's fine. So if I have anything for anybody else here today, is just, I just want to say this. Don't feel like focusing on your self-healing is a selfish act. It's not selfish. It's not self-centered. It is something that is necessary if we are going to remain sober, because if we don't take the time to look at the things that caused our suffering, you know, those things will pop up in again over and over until we look at them. And sometimes, like, they get so painful that we relapse, you know? So don't ignore whatever it is that your mind is telling you to, like, not focus on. Focus on the healing.
Michelle, thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
On that note, don't forget, no outside solutions to inside problems, and keep knocking doors down.